You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
All right, we're live, it seems.
We are live. Hello, world.
Hello, beautiful world. Welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
This is a show where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. And today we're recapping season 2, episode 8, and it's titled The Sun Won't Set.
Yeah, I like that title. I'm excited.
Yes. These have always been pretty ominous. Not ominous. They just never match up what the episode's about. Well, lately they have been. Season 2, they have been. But
yeah.
Interested to see what this one brings. Where the way this podcast works is we talk about where we were the last episode in this season, just to get you caught up to speed if you haven't been keeping up or you're new around here. Then we give you some of our own desperate deeds as we relate to these women on a soul level, on a soulful level with our own desperation. And then we recap the episode that we're covering today. And afterwards, we evaluate it on several different scales. So that's the gist of what goes down here.
Yep.
We should take them through where we were last time.
Yeah, for sure. Last episode was Color and Light, and we really enjoyed it. That was a good episode. We had a lot to talk about, I feel like.
Lots of photographs, lots of physical evidence, physical photographs of things, and it brought me back. I was like, what a timestamp.
Yeah.
So I can talk about Susan because she did one of the most desperate things I could really think of. And I've been cringing at it ever since we've watched it still. She went over to, it's okay. Actually, she did two cringy things. I shouldn't overlook the major cringy thing she did. She hooked up with her ex after a breakup as a rebound. That was cringy thing number one. And that's, everybody knows that. Everybody, like, we all know that's icky. Don't do that. But the second cringy thing she did is she went over to her ex's house and was like, I see that you didn't keep the Valentine's Day card that I gave you. You returned it to me. And she's like, usually people keep that stuff. And she gives it back to him and he throws it in the trash in front of her.
And yeah, because that's what a normal person would do. Like, what is wrong with you, Susan?
It makes me sick inside. So that happened. The whole thing is she sleeps with her ex-husband, Carl, as a rebound. And Carl's like, so what's going on here after this? Like, they hook up, and the next morning, their daughter catches them in bed. Carl is like, are we going to be together now? But he is also rebounding from his relationship with Edie. He was dating this other chick. So they're both rebounding. He's like, what's good with our relationship? Susan's like, oh, no, that was just like a one-night stand. He goes back to Edie, which I think he masterminded the whole time, was planning to do this. That's my theory. Planning in true fuckboy fashion to go back to his main bitch.
I mean, he just keeps them both on the back burner. Like, when one is, when one turns him down, he goes to the other. Yeah, they're both too stupid to figure that out.
Wow. Is that a spoiler?
No. I'm saying, like, Susan's not saying anything, and she also let him take advantage of her, and Edie just let him come right back. Like,
yeah, and then, like, it ends,
that's a spoiler.
It ends with a weird scene of Edie being like, thank you for sleeping with him, basically. He came back with flowers. It was great. And, like, I won. It was super weird. So that was Susan. And before that, she was engaged to Mike, running, screaming down the street in a wedding dress. And
the most Susan thing she could do.
We, like, just can't forget that. Yeah. I just had to bring it back up. And Lynette had a really fun storyline where this couple that she becomes friends with, because they both have evil twins. And they're doing, like, this play date thing so that, like, when the twins are at the other house, like, Lynette gets a break. And when the twins come over to her house, that other mom gets the break. And they have this going on, it seems, for a little bit until the boys, the other twins, bring over a porno DVD of their parents.
Yeah.
And just saying it aloud is pretty insane. It's so a porno. Crazy. Like, I don't know how you don't know what that is. Those boys were old enough to know. I have to say.
And it's very, like, incestuous for them to be watched, like, that kid to watch his parents' video.
You don't want to see that. Like, your parents, like, in their underwear, even. I would have been like, ew, I don't want to see this.
No, hell no.
So they watch the porno DVD, and Lynette and Tom, like, catch them, and they bring it up to the parents after the play date. They're like, so we found this DVD, and the woman is mortified, and she's, like, Lynette's scared that her play dates are going to be canceled. And so her biggest fear is not that this lady made a porno DVD with her husband. It's that her play dates won't happen.
Yeah, she just can't get her naps.
So she goes over to the house with Tom, and Tom is not on board. Tom is like, let's just let it be. We don't fucking need to bring up the porno. We don't need play dates.
Yeah.
Done and done. So Lynette's like, no. So they go over there, and the lady is still mortified. But when the husband hears that they're over, he's like, welcome to my house. And he, like, pours the whiskey, and he's like, do you want to see where, like, the magic happens, basically? And he has a whole studio, which that must be a big house to have a studio that your kids don't know about. That's, like, your porn studio.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine, like, you hit a certain age and you walk into your parents', like, sex porno room, like
you like go away to college and they've turned your room into a sex dungeon.
Oh my god,
it's out of control. So
brutal.
The husband guy is talking about his porno stuff like he's a director, like it's art. It's concerning. And Lynette and Tom are being true champions. They're going along with it. But as soon as they leave, Lynette's like, we're never having another play date with them again. That was fucking weird.
Yeah.
And that's it. But it was so funny and fun. So
it was fun. It was like a funny one-off.
Yeah. It was a good one. But
I agree.
Yes. Gabby and Brie had their own thing going on, though.
Yeah. So before I jump into Gabby and Brie, I'm going to just give a brief summary of what's going on with the Applewhites, because it does tie in. So Betty and Matthew, they find out that Caleb escaped from, like, his little prison. Another, speaking of dungeons.
These houses have lots of rooms, I guess. Yeah.
So they start, like, snooping around the neighborhood, and Matthew, when he's, like, searching, like, it goes into Bree's backyard and finds Danielle just, like, for no reason in a bikini, like, laying down. I don't know.
It's not hot enough. It doesn't even look sunny out.
No, and she's, like, smoking a cigarette or some shit. And basically, like, they have the most weird, like, back and forth about, like, going on a date. And, like, Danielle's, like, doesn't she say, like, if you're asking about a date, like, the answer will be yes or something weird like that? Yeah,
she's like, did you come to ask me out? Because I'll say yes.
Which we've, like, never seen them interact before, so, like, what? But then, like, so now I'll kind of go to the other stories before. They all converge, I guess. So for Gabby, she has some of her modeling friends coming to visit. So she starts, like, crash dieting, which can't be healthy when you have a baby in your belly, but whatever. And she's, like, doing everything she can to not look pregnant so she can fit into a 00 dress.
which is upsetting in its own way.
I've never been close to being a 00, and that is, like, truly, like,
I think I was, like, 7. Yeah. I remember going to buy, like, juniors clothing, like, really young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that I was fat, but, like, 00 is the smallest size.
I was in a, like, high school. I was a 2. I was a little teeny thing.
Ooh.
But that has changed. but, yeah, so I was getting there. I was close, but not close enough.
But you didn't freak out when you hit size 0. Yeah, Gabby, like, no. Loses it because the sales attendant says, oh, you could size up. And she's like,
What the fuck?
Like, I'm pregnant. Like, she is.
No, she's crazy.
Yeah.
But, so Brie ends up, like, helping her with the dress, like, altering it, basically probably making it a zero, but whatever.
Yeah. Just bought the zero.
Yeah. So, Bree, like, gives Gabby advice because she's clearly not excited about this kid. And she's, like, she basically says, like, being a parent is a gift. Like, you should try looking at it like that. But Gabby's just like, thanks, and keeps, like, getting ready for her friends to come. And so when they arrive, she opens the door, and they literally are like, oh, my God, you're pregnant. Because, like, models
they
totally
just looked at her. Yeah. They weren't even like, you're glowing. They were just like, you're pregnant.
Yeah. But they, like, congratulate her, and it's all good. And, like, they end up having a good time. But later, like, Gabby realizes, like, their lives are just, like, shallow. Like, she talks about how one of them is losing jobs to, like, younger models and, like, just, like, stuff like that, that, like, as you age in that industry you run into. And Gabby kind of realizes, like, okay, like, even if I had stayed there, I probably wouldn't be any happier than I am right now. Yeah. So, like, I don't know. But she also, like, realizes, like, you know, her real friends aren't people that'll make her feel bad for just living the way she's living. So that was her story.
She was like, I changed. She, like, recognized that she changed a little bit.
Yeah. So then Bree comes, like, okay, so Gabby is at home, and she goes upstairs, and she thinks there's, like, an intruder in the house, and it turns out it's Caleb, and in a confused, scary moment, because he's, like, clearly mentally, like, disabled, he, like, kind of comes towards her in a scary way, and she falls down the stairs, and Bree finds Gabby on the floor because she, like, came to get her sewing kit. And Gabby is taken away in an ambulance, and she, like, whispers something to Bree, and Bree brings her sonogram picture.
So, the baby she didn't want.
Yeah. So it's, like, the one moment she finally realizes she might want to be a mom, she gets shoved down the stairs. So that kind of left us in a little bit of suspense. And then, so Bree has a story of her own. She's not just there as Gabby's seamstress. So George, like, takes Bree to some house that he bought, and Bree's like, you know, happy for him, I guess. But then, like, his mom is there, and, like, some realtors there in the, like, in a different room, and they, like, George proposes.
The stress in your breath.
Yeah, so George proposes. Yeah, it's not good. But Bree gets all, like, crazy, not crazy, but she, like, panics.
She says,
like,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
She gets, like, she's, like, deer in the headlights. She's, like, okay. Yeah. So then Bree starts having second thoughts because duh. And she goes to see her therapist, Dr. Goldfein, who we love. And he asks her if, like, this is what she actually wants, you know, especially because, like, Rex died so suddenly and, like, not that long ago.
Like, a month ago.
Yeah. And she, like, she knows that she loves him as a friend, but not necessarily, like, as a sexual being, like a companion. Like, she loves George because they like a lot of the same things, but, like, she's not, like, turned on by him because, like,
yeah,
duh.
As many of you know, that doesn't make a relationship.
Gotta have many, both.
We've all tried.
Yeah. Basically, she's like, I want to keep living this life with him. Like, I don't know. I guess I'll get married. It's, like, such a, like, defeatist, like, attitude, which I kind of get. She's grieving. I think that's something we forget, I guess, is, like, her mind, like, she's
not thinking straight. Yeah. Like, she could plead temporary insanity if she were to be on trial for something.
For sure. So then she shows up to his house, and it's, like, an engagement party, and everyone's, like, kind of giving him shit, like, oh, we thought you were gay, or you never get married. And he, like, mentions that he might want kids, and Bree, like, kind of shuts him down aggressively. And she's like, I have two kids already. Like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to birth any more children. And she's like, I can't marry you. And, like, she tells her she talked about it to her therapist. And so she's like, I got to go. So she just, like, leaves. And George just looks a little, like, psychopathy. He's kind of, like, glaring. And he goes back into the party. So the next day, or whatever day, maybe it was a week later, who knows.
Who knows.
Someone is following Dr. Goldfein as he's jogging. It turns out it's obviously George, and he throws him off a fucking bridge.
It was so aggressive.
It was, like, insane. I was like,
no witnesses.
Yes, in broad daylight. I was like, this man is bold.
He's bold, but he's getting away with it. He's walking the walk,
mm-hmm.
and talking the talk. He's doing
it. Oh, yeah.
that's where we ended up because there was no Paul feature, really.
I feel like they just have, okay, maybe that's the problem, is, like, they have too many storylines right now. Because, like, Paul and Zach were, like, the main mystery last season, and now we have a different main mystery, but we're still kind of talking about Paul and Zach.
Yeah, they're, like, auxiliary right now. I'm not too interested. Zach seems to be in Utah. Paul is just gardening still. He's, the garden was all fucked up from how long he was gone. So we're going to see what if they come back or what's going on with everything. But now we can move on to our own desperate deeds. And I think Jordan is on deck to start this one.
I don't even know if this qualifies as a desperate deed. It was like more of a defeatist moment. But I was walking my dog. And it was early in the morning. Like before I had to go to work, I was already kind of running late. And I get like rained on with bird shit. Like, not, like, a big glob of bird shit on my head, but, like, lots of little flecks of bird shit. And I'm standing there, and I literally, I'm on the phone with my boyfriend, and I tell him, I'm like, I think a bird just shit on me, or, like, a bunch of birds. He's like, what? And I'm like, yeah. But I was, like, so, like, my brain was like, all right, we're just gonna take this L. I, like, finished walking our dog, because he had to, like, go. And I get in the house, and I stare in the mirror, and yes, there's flecks of bird shit in my hair. It's disgusting. So I had to wash my hair, and, like, the worst part of it was I had to, like, text my boss and be like, I'm gonna be late because a bird shit on my head. And he was just like, that's a new one, LOL. And I was like, yeah, LOL. LOL. So that was my desperate-ish deed. I don't know if it qualifies, but I had to share it. I
thought you had to, like, wash your hair and be late to work.
I had to, like, wash it, dry it. Like, I looked... It really fucked up my whole day. And everyone kept telling me, like, that's good luck. I'm like, it's good luck? That's a sign of good luck to have a bird shit on your head?
Yeah, they say that. I've heard that. I just don't believe that, though.
No. Also, I've never heard that before, but I guess it's a thing.
I thought you were going to say I've never had good luck. It's, like, dramatic.
A lot of times I feel like that. Dramatic flair. No,
I was discussing with Jordan about what my desperate deed should be because I ran out of dad desperate deeds. Like, I'm sure if I tried hard enough, I would think of some, but those are exhausted. You heard too. I actually didn't go over this one with Jordan, but I've been thinking about it because I was inspired by Susan screaming in the wedding dress down the street. I have never done that specifically. I have, it was freshman year of college, and I had been dating this guy pretty seriously for, like, most of the year. I think it was about March for that time, so school started. We'd been together for a bit. There were ups and downs because he was a weirdo. And basically, he took mushrooms one day and decided that he wanted to break up with me high on mushrooms, which is not a good feeling.
No.
To have somebody high on psychedelics and be like, I really don't want to spend any more time with you.
Oh, so, man.
He decided that he was going to break up with me. So he came to my dorm room and sat on my bed and was like, I can't do this. And he was high on mushrooms. So, like, the conversation didn't make much sense to me or, like, go anywhere. But I got the gist of it that he was, like, over it. And I was like, you are, like, not in your right state of mind. I was trying to do some, like, convincing. I was trying to do some improv work on this situation. So I was like, you're not in your right mind. Like, you should, like, take some time. And, like, we can revisit this when you're sober. And he's like, no. And then he got up to leave. And I got up as well to try and chase after him. I don't remember where. I must have been on the other side of the room, and I think he was still sitting on my bed, which was closer to the door. But he gets up to leave, and I literally ran across. And this dorm room is so small. Like, there's not – there's, like, five steps I could take. And I ate shit in my dorm room, like, across the floor, like, fell flat on my face trying to chase him out of my bedroom, being, like, desperately, like, don't leave me high on mushrooms. And he did leave me for about a month. And then we got back together because I was desperate as well. I think the desperate move is getting back together, but it's also just falling flat on my face over some guy who's high on mushrooms breaking up with me.
No, no, my God. This is brutal.
I don't think I've ever told you that story before.
I don't think so, no.
It's the truth. I was a desperate little bitch. That guy went on to date some chick after me, which this is the curse Jordan and I talk about. The girl he dated after me, it's been like 10 years now almost. He's like still with her, so I don't know.
Of course.
It's always my bad luck like that.
No, don't say that.
Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, everyone. don't do that. Avoid the birds. Don't get shit on. Don't fall flat on your face for anyone.
That's a good rule. Don't fall flat on your face for anyone.
For anyone under any influence of drugs or sober. Doesn't matter. Don't fall. But yeah, that's desperate deeds. Hope that got you guys warmed up.
Those were good ones. We really are just embarrassing ourselves. I hope you guys enjoy it.
I'll never forget that. I'll never forget it. But yes, we're going to go watch the episode, mm-hmm. and then we will be right back. But in case things get buck wild, make sure to buckle up.
Buckle up. After falling down the stairs last episode, Gabby suffers a miscarriage and gets a lesson on grief from an unlikely source. Susan discovers her father isn't who she thought he was. Lynette worries her kids are vulnerable to strangers and devises a scheme to prove it to Tom. Bree sees a new side to George when his possessiveness gets the best of him. Caleb is found and arrested following his escape.
Well, now that we've finished the episode, we can't give you a reason why it was called The Sun Won't Set.
Yeah, that was just like they threw a dart at a list of names and hope, you know, picked whatever it landed on.
Yes, I guess the sun won't set on these situations because they're ongoing, it seems, throughout the season. But that makes sense for the show. So we'll take it from the top, though, with a controversial opening, in our opinion, because it feels like they only brought up Betty Applewhite because they realized they didn't talk about her at all, ever. Mm-hmm. And we learn no new information about her besides that she's a concert pianist.
Yeah, they even are just like, she has a secret. It's like, we know. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, so we open on a town meeting, a street, a lane meeting. I don't know what you want to call it. And everybody's pissed because of the break-in. And they're like, what do we do? And there was that neighborhood watch, if you remember, where they had Nazi-like symbols on their armbands for their... They did.
Yeah.
And that they talk about that. They're like, nobody's even been patrolling. Like, what about our neighborhood watch? And they're trying to find, like, something to do. But before that, Mary Alice Young does her famous VO. And she starts talking about Betty. And you're confused because you know that.
You're like, who's Betty?
Mary Alice doesn't care about Betty. No. The writers don't care about Betty. Everybody doesn't care about Betty so far.
Mm-hmm.
So Betty Applewhite was a gifted woman. Everyone said so since she was a child. Her piano teacher praised her dexterity. Her college professor applauded her rhythm. And her first symphony instructor loved her dramatic flair. But she doesn't do that now. She is now just a woman with a secret. One that she was determined to keep by any means necessary. And Mrs. McCluskey's back going off about her new lights that deter intruders. And Betty and Matt are like sweating bullets in the corner because they know that it was Caleb that attacked Gabby.
Yeah.
And they end up coming to a head where they want to have a vote about something. Oh, about having armed security guards. It got really aggressive really fast. Mrs. McCluskey was like, get some snipers up in here. Like, just it went there. And Betty was like, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit. So she goes and sits at the piano very suddenly. It all feels forced and unnatural. This was the worst cold open I've seen on this show.
It was pretty bad.
So she sits and she just starts playing. She plays, like, a number. It's like, do-do-do-do. And, like, Tom's like, wow, that was impressive. She plays it for, like, 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And she's like, sorry, just thought things were getting dramatic in here. And Mrs. McCluskey is like, what the fuck? We're trying to vote.
Any normal person would be like, okay, anyway, moving on.
Okay. And so then Tom's like, wow, that was great. And then Betty does like a little number on the piano and everybody's like, oh my God. And it's awkward. That would never happen. It was so unrealistic. And then Betty was a gifted woman, and the greatest of all her gifts was her timing, is what Mary Alice Young says. But
what does that even mean, though? Like, that doesn't really apply here, because it wasn't like an accident. Like, I don't know. She was just playing to distract people.
It was so stupid. So, yeah, then we get our intro, and then we come back and we start with Gabby, and I wrote, Gabby had a miscarriage, I guess. It was surprising to me. I know that she fell down the stairs, but the abruptness that they introduced this miscarriage was daunting. So Mary Alice Young says, once they suffer a miscarriage, women sometimes sit in a dark house for hours. They refuse to face the light of day, afraid of the possibility that life will go on. They hold on to reminders of their unborn child and dream of what might have been. Yeah, that's how some women, like, react when they suffer a loss. But Gabby was not one of those women. And I was like, all right, I guess a hard open on a miscarriage. Like, and Gabby is, like, going to return all the gifts and, like, all the clothes that she had for her child when she gets ambushed by the ladies, mm-hmm. which I thought was majorly aggressive of them. They scheduled a hang without, like, Gabby's consent. Or
yeah,
they were like, we're about to hang and it's like all about you, and she's like, what, like I was mm-hmm. busy today.
Yeah, they're
like, oh, we didn't know that. Like, I feel like they put a lot of expectation on her to be like really sad and really grieving, and then when she wasn't, they were taken aback because mm-hmm. she's heading out, she's getting her little Maserati with her clothes, and like the girls are like, okay, just like let us know, I guess, when. Oh, well, they also tell her to keep the clothes. They're like, you never know if you're going to try again and stuff. And I think it's been pretty clear that Gabby doesn't want a fucking kid.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, I'll call you tonight. We can figure out a time next week. And Gabby's like, how about I just fucking call you? And, like, leaves them in the dust and drives away in her little Maserati.
Mm-hmm.
So we can just continue on. That was where we opened. But
yeah.
We can go over Gabby's storyline. Basically, we get a Danny Trejo cameo. I wouldn't even say cameo. He's a supporting actor in this.
Yeah, he pretty much drives her storyline.
Yeah, he just shows up out of nowhere. It took me by surprise, and it was the best surprise I could have gotten. There's Trejo's tacos, like, all around me here.
I love Danny Trejo. He's great.
He pops up
in the most random ass shit too.
Yeah, I've never had his tacos or his donuts. He has a donut shop too, but I feel like they'd be good.
I know. I feel like that too. We gotta go.
Yeah, Jordan told me that he does student films as well.
Yeah, he's like, he has a million credits basically because he'll pretty much guest star in anything. And then like, he's always down to do like student films and stuff. So he's like pretty cool.
Yeah, seems like a cool guy, but it's all, yeah, her storyline's driven by him. He shows up to her house and is like, Carlos told me to watch you. And then he seems kind of murdery for a minute, but he's mm-hmm. really there to help Gabby deal with her grief.
Yeah.
So it starts, though, when Gabby goes to visit Carlos. And I noted that he's looking a little rugged, like he's got some scars and bruises.
Yeah, he's looking a little beat.
He's looking pretty beat. And he says that he had a rough couple of days, clearly. After she told, so I guess he tells her after she told him about the baby, he just lost it. His hands look like mincemeat. He ripped the mattress open apparently. And then it's a wild time. They started injecting him with tranquilizer though. And he said it's doing the trick, and he starts crying and he says, we didn't even talk about names. Like, this is really devastating to me. He had mm-hmm. his top five picked out and he asks her if she wants to hear. And she goes, nah, I'm good. Which is devastating and very unempathetic of her as a partner. But what's new? And she says, how can you name something that's the size of a walnut? And maybe that's fucked up, but I kind of do agree. And he just looks at her And then he's like, he notes that she's wearing a new sweater and he's like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, I mean, everybody grieves differently and I just like to shop. So he gets pissed that she's taking it really well and he asks her if she's even sad. And she's like, what do you think? Which is a terrible answer when somebody asks you something really direct like that.
Yeah. I'm like, okay.
He's like, it wasn't a rhetorical question. But he gets kind of aggro and he grabs her sweater, which is a little bit scary. And then he's like, I guess my tranquilizer's wearing off. And then he gets up to go. Mm-hmm. And that's their whole interaction, which is pretty shitty after a miscarriage.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's one of those things, though, where it's like, I get why Carlos is frustrated, but grief just, like, hits people in weird ways, at weird times. And so I think, like, it's kind of unfair for him to, like, challenge her, I guess, like that.
Yeah.
So soon. Because, like, there are people that are, like, that's denial's part of it, right? Like, denying that you ever felt anything.
Yeah. But I think, yes, it's unfair of him as well. He's not being the best partner by being like, are you even sad? And he's like, yeah, in prison and she has to deal with it alone. And like, he knows her. They've been married, it seems like, for quite a while. So I feel like he should know her better than that. Mm-hmm. But everybody grieves differently. I think I'm happy that they covered miscarriage in this show. I think that's interesting and a topic that not a lot of shows talk about. Like, mm-hmm. not a lot of like quirky dramedies like this cover too many, mm-hmm. too much.
Yeah, no.
So good on them. We should talk about miscarriage more often. And I think Gabby's response is totally justified, even though it's a little bit cold. Mm-hmm. But that's where Danny Trejo comes in, because that's where what we see next. Danny Trejo rolls up to Gabby's house, and I was taken aback. I was like, is this for real? Is this for real?
Yeah.
The music is really ominous, and he has, I said, gardening or murder tools in his trunk along with a six-pack, mm-hmm. a six-pack of beer. So questionable activities about to go down. Gabby's inside doing yoga, and he looks in the window, and she freaks out. And she's like, what do you want? Who are you? And he's like, don't worry. Carlos sent me from the inside. And she's like, the inside? Like, she doesn't get it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I just noted prison because it's pretty clear.
Yeah, like, sis, come on.
She's like, the inside? Like, I don't understand. And she says she's going to call the police. His name's Hector. Carlos told him what happened to her and asked him to come by to keep an eye on her.
Yeah.
And he asked if he can come in and she's like, no. And he said that he brought a cooler and he's just going to camp outside. She says, I can take care of myself. And I like that attitude. He's like, okay, cool. I get it. You need your space. And she's mm-hmm. like, thanks. And he walks away and dips and she locks the door and it seems like he goes to his car. Then Gabby leaves for something and comes back and, like, he's out front all of a sudden sitting on her porch. And he's just being friendly. It seems like he's, like, the mail came and he's drinking beer and it seems mm-hmm. midday. So super chill guy. And she's like, you said that you were fucking leaving. And he's like, no, I said I was giving you space. I was watching you from my car. And she said, the guy who broke in just came in and stole ice cream. I'm really, like, not in danger. Like, you can fuck off. And mm-hmm. he said, Carlos thinks you do. And she's like, she tries to go inside. Or she tries to leave. I think that's what's going on. She says she's going shopping because he asked where she's going. And he says, you sure do like to shop? And she says, yes, I do. And he says, all I've seen you do in the past day and a half has been, like, shopping, going out, and you really must be dealing with something. And she stops dead in her tracks and she's like, what was that? Excuse me? And he says, Carlos has your number, says that you're tough, Cookie, so tough you don't know how to deal with your feelings. And I'm like, wow, that's goals.
Like, that's like, that's a so Carlos does know her, I guess. He was just like emotional. Yeah,
I just want to be so tough that people are like, she has no feeling. I want to be Gabby. But Danny Trejo calls Carlos a perceptive man, and she says, the line of the episode for me, he thought I was cheating with two gay guys. Is perceptive the word you really want to go with? So love that Gabby calls him out on it, and mm-hmm. he said that he never heard of anybody shopping out the pain, and she says, why the fuck is everybody on my back? I just want to deal with my loss my way, and then she speeds off.
Yeah.
Later, surprise, surprise, he's still out front. He's cutting an apple with the murder knife slash gardening tool that he had. I don't know.
Doing something ominous.
I don't know when people cut an apple with a pocket knife. I'm just like, what's happening? Like,
yeah.
There's no reason. So she has a new hairdo and he calls her out and she's like, yeah, and I'm going to get waxed and a pedicure and all this other shit and yada, yada, yada. I'm tired of you judging me. What do I have to do to get rid of you? She offers to write him a check of $1,000 and he says that he doesn't really have a bank account because he just got out of jail. And that is the most suspect thing of all yet.
Yeah.
So it was 2004, everybody, besides 16-year-old John Roland had a bank account. So
yeah,
he's like, oh, we can like go open one for you. She's just doing everything, but she lets him drive, which is a huge mistake. Never let him drive. And she gets in and there's like no window thing and the door handle, like she's trapped.
Mm-hmm.
And I was panicked. I'm like, she's gonna fucking get murdered. It's gonna be the beginning of an SVU episode.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes her to a park and he's like, good, no one's here. And I was like, that's weird that he would take her to a park. And he's like, I'll get the stuff. Like, it sounds like, and then it becomes a little bit more pleasant. It sounds like they're about to have a picnic or something. And I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
And then she gets out of the car, she takes her heels off and she runs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good for you, Gabby. She is the smartest. So she runs away. But then he's like, where are you going? And she's like, oh, wait, like, I thought you were going to murder. Oh, because he's like, I have the balloon. He's holding a balloon. And she's like, what the hell is happening? I thought you were going to murder me. And he's like, with a balloon? Like, no. And then they do this whole ceremony about, like, letting go of your grief. And, like, it's a representation. The balloon is a representation of the grief. And, like, when you let it go, you're able to, like, move on. It's very, like, meta and very zen and very 2021. Yeah.
Very, like,
symbiotic.
Having a stroke over here. Okay. It's very symbolic, and I think, like, it's actually a really nice way for her to, like, express her grief. And it ends up being really, like, moving. Like,
it was very
cute. I almost cried.
Yeah, it was moving, which was a surprise from Gabby, but she's about to let it go, and he's like, you can say something if you want. And she's like, this is stupid. But then she gives a little bit of a monologue, and she talks about how she did think about names. If it was a boy, it was going to be Charlie. And if it was a girl, it was going to be Aurora with a Hispanic accent thrown in there.
I can't
reproduce it. But, yeah, then Treo is so reassuring, and he says that the names are nice, and it moved me. He was like, those are nice names.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts to cry and lets go of the balloon, and the grief is gone for now, temporarily. Yeah.
No, it ended up being, like, I thought it was a really beautiful story, and I think it's beautiful on both ends. Like, Carlos genuinely cares about her grief, and Gabby, like, finally opens up in a way that she maybe wouldn't have before.
Yeah, I think having an episode where Carlos is doing something, the greatest thing Carlos has ever done, and he's like barely in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in the work of Danny Trejo. But Danny Trejo, what a great guest star.
Yeah, he's great.
I love him. Is it he in, what is it, the Tarantino movie Dusk Till Dawn?
Yeah, and then he's like Machete in the Machete movies.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Machete. He and Robert Rodriguez are like cousins or something.
Yeah, he's just very like typecast, like, because he looks the way he looks.
Well, because he really was like a drug. He's been in prisons. Like, he was in prison with Charlie Manson.
How did he, like, I mean, this might be for another episode, but I'm like, what's his story? Like, how did he become an actor?
We'll have to look it up, because it is interesting. He's, like, he has a very interesting life story. He's been in, he was, like, in San Quentin.
Okay.
Like, real prison.
I'm about to look this up later. Yeah. So, moral of the story, you can start over whenever, grieving or not.
Mm-hmm.
Real life Danny Trejo, you can start over your entire life now.
Yeah.
And if you're grieving, you can start over once you let that grief go. And I recommend the balloon trick. So cute.
For sure.
Well, next, I think we can probably save Bree for last.
Yeah.
Because once again, George pops off. But if you want to talk a bit about Susan, I think you had some hot opinions about how she is very selfish yet again.
Yeah, so we want to dive into Susan now?
Yeah.
Okay, so Susan's mom is finally getting married to Morty, and her story opens with a very strange, like, Susan asking Mike to be her date, which was
She's bugging Mike again.
She's fucking crazy, but Mike tells her he's not gonna fucking go, but to tell her mom that he's sorry. Susan tries to get him to, like, change his mind, but he's like, fuck no, like, no. Like, I threw your Valentine's card away. Get the hint.
Get the fucking message.
Yeah. And so then,
She literally went around and was like, what you been up to? And yeah, she goes over so casual. She's, like, cleaning a fucking, he's cleaning the leaves out of his gutters. And she's like, what you been up to, Mike? Like, nothing like, happened.
I'm like, read the room. He threw your card away in front of your face. Like, he doesn't want to be around you.
And he also verbatim said, I'm not interested in anything, any type of relationship with you, friendship or otherwise. Like, he verbatim said that to her. And she comes around like, are you sure you don't want to come to this wedding? It won't be weird. And he's like, it will be weird. And she's like, it won't be. And he's like, shut the fuck up. It was even more egregious. She starts, like, chatting to him. She says, I've been working on a book lately, which is the Hail Mary of all Hail Marys after a breakup, where you're like, what have you been up to? Because I've been, like, doing really well, like, doing really great on this project, on this thing. And she tells him about her book, and she's, like, kind of autobiographical. And I'm like,
who are you? No one gives a fuck. Like, what is happening?
She's like, what, would you go rush out and buy my life story? And he's like, it's like, clearly no, this guy wants nothing to do with you.
Like, Susan, be quiet. So, yeah, she's like talking about writing this autobiography about her dad or herself and then how her dad was murdered in Hanoi as a merchant marine. And Mike's like, merchant marines? It's listen to the name, merchant marine. He's like, they didn't fucking fight. Like, what are you talking about? And then Susan's like super confused. So she like, this kind of like throws her into a tailspin. She's like, fuck, my mom's been lying to me. And I'm like, Susan, save it for after the wedding. Save it. But no, Susan does not do that because she's Susan. So basically,
I said, Sophie, the next time we see them, when she goes to address Sophie, because you guys know that's what she's going to do. I said, Sophie is looking decrepit on this river. Mm-hmm. Like the opening shot of Sophie, she looks like a zombie bride.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, she looks, yeah, it's rough. But Susan like confronts her mom about her dad, and Sophie like gets all like nervous and doesn't want to answer, like freaks out. So Morty like waits and like he tells her that she was like a one night stand baby.
With like a lot of Morty pizzazz too.
Yeah.
Like he tells his own story about how he lost his virginity in an alleyway to a hooker, basically.
I know. I was like, please stop. But so Susan's like shocked and disappointed, but she also is like, okay, well, my mom was super young. Like it happens, like whatever, which I thought was actually relatively calm for her. Like, I don't know. I expected more brutal reaction.
Yeah. But Susan did good. Not timing wise, but like keeping her emotions in check. That was good. Not like her usually. She was pretty reserved for the spat that could have happened.
Yeah. But then it like gets weird because at the wedding, like, I guess Susan doesn't really push it. Sophie does. Like, she just like reveals to everybody that like she had an affair with a married man and that's Susan's dad. And Susan's like, what the fuck?
She name drops him. She gives his name in front of a room full of people.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. So Susan, like, dips and is pissed off. And she decides to, like, look for her dad, who happens to run a business nearby that some random dude in the crowd points out.
Oh, my God. The most random fucking dude in the crowd points it out.
Yeah.
And then Susan goes to, like, find him. And he looks like such a dud. Like, he just looks like a fucking average dude.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God. I could. Yeah, Morty. Morty was a scene stealer this episode for me.
He always is. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah, Sophie brings it up in her speech, which that's on her at that point.
Yeah, but I'm like, Susan, you should have just, like, not even made anybody think about it until after the wedding. Because it's, like, obviously her mom is going to feel the apple doesn't fall far off the tree, right? So it's, like, this neurotic, crazy behavior that they both do is, like, exacerbated because Susan couldn't just wait.
Yeah.
Like, her mom's rehearsal for her wedding was not the time.
Yeah, and Susan storms out of the wedding.
Yeah, which is also, the whole, like, get room, over yourself. Like,
mid-speech, kind of.
And yeah.
It's, like, a disaster. So Susan's just Susaning it up everywhere. But, yeah, mm-hmm. Morty stole the show. He was very supportive. And at the end, he asked Sophie, he's like, you're not, like, still seeing that guy, right? But, like, how devastating to find out that your parent that you thought was dead, like, lives down the street, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel for her. Then this ends. We can go back to Mike, who was not at the motherfucking wedding because he had better shit to do. Mike's chilling at home with Bongo, and, like, Bongo, like, perks up. And that's surprising because he let Susan be held at gunpoint for, like, 6 hours with a stranger. So I don't know why what he was perking up at. This dog is unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
He perks up, and Mike goes to the... Mike goes to the door and he sees Caleb doing the most erratic behavior, like checking car doors to see if they're unlocked, like running around the street. And I'm like, nobody has, he must have been doing this for nights on end. Mm-hmm. It's been like a week since Caleb escaped. And this is his first night of checking. It was so bizarre. So he sees Caleb literally running and slamming on cars. And then Mike pins him, and Mrs. M is there with her taser because Mrs. McCluskey, Mrs. M in my notes, but she's there with her taser because she comes prepared. And he tells her to call the police, and they catch Caleb. And they have definitely replaced this actor like several different times because this is not the same actor that I swear to God was in their basement.
They did replace the actor, just so you know. They did.
Okay, okay.
He did get recast, so...
Why?
I don't know. They didn't, like, I read about it. There's, like, rumors that the original guy, like, was just difficult to work with or I don't know. But, yeah, they did replace him.
Okay. That's insane.
Yeah. Like, so you're spot on with that.
Because it was, like, a clear replacement, but I had to be sure. I just, okay. But, so they catch Caleb, and Mike rescues the town yet again. And Susan's going to be at his doorstep tomorrow talking about it, I'm sure. But we can go into Lynette now because Mrs. McCluskey having a taser is a key part of this story.
Yeah.
So Lynette's driving down the street from, like, home from work, and she sees the it's dark out, and she sees the twins out there. And I said they were fighting, and then I guess they're playing football. I don't know what they're doing. But Lynette yells at them for playing outside after dark. But it's not that dark because of Mrs. McCluskey's new lights that were mentioned in the beginning, and Mrs. McCluskey is somehow outside. I feel like they should have done a product placement. They mentioned these lights several different times.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, they were like, the lights. And it's propaganda for lights for your kids.
Yeah.
Just propaganda. So the twins are like, Dad said it was okay to be outside. And she's like... okay, let me handle this. She goes inside to Tom, and he's just so chill, per usual. He's he loves being a stay-at-home dad. This is, like, vacation for him. And she's like, let's talk. And then she makes him go to the window and watch the kids on the sidewalk. Or, like, they go look, and he's like, oh, they snuck out again. And she's like, how often does this happen? It's, like, nighttime. And he says, they're so slippery. It's like trying to herd cats. And they send them to bed, and they have a talk about this. Because she's like, they could have been kidnapped. And Tom is like, okay, he does the thing. This is my pet peeve when older people are like, in my day,
yeah,
it was like this. And he says, in my day, I used to get on my bike and ride away, and my mom would have no idea where I am. And I hear people say that, old people, aka my dad, say that all the fucking time. And I'm just like, it's not 1960 anymore. I don't know what the fuck to tell you.
Yeah.
Like, so Tom uses that defense. It's my least favorite defense in the book.
Super lame.
You're not that smart if you're using that one. But he says that's what it was like in my day, and my mom didn't bat an eye. And Lynette says exactly what I said. That was a different time. Like, there was a break-in in our neighborhood recently.
Yeah,
what
she's the hell? Also that, too, though. Like, someone broke in, scared Gabby to death, and then, like, I don't know. I'm like, they haven't caught the guy. So, like, what the fuck is Tom thinking? Like, he knows there's an active possible predator.
I know. So they get in this whole argument.
He's like, in my day, kids just got kidnapped and no one talked about it.
Yeah, like, that's what it seems like. We just let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they have, like, a little joke about Penny, because she's like, you need eyes in the back of your head. He's like, my two in front are working, which is so annoying to me. I would have had a freak out. And she says, where's Penny then? And Tom's like, oh, I don't know. And then he finds her on the couch. So maybe not number one dad this episode, but we still love him. And then next thing we know, Tom has, it's like midday on a Saturday, and Tom leads Lynette into the living room with the boys. And he's like, I thought about what you said, and we had a talk. And he goes over this talk with the boys where every answer is like, we run away. Like, he's like, what do you do if a stranger comes up? And they're like, we run away. And he's like, cool, go get some ice cream. And Lynette's like, hang on. She's like, what if they have candy? What if they offer to take you to the circus? And the boys are like thinking about it. They're like,
hell yeah, we run away.
Yeah. They're like, do we run away? And Lynette and Tom have an argument about this. Like, he's like, we worked really hard on that. And our boys are smart. Like, it's going to be fine. That you don't have to lecture me and all this stuff. So he says, I keep our children alive. There's four when you left. There's four now. And if there's ever three, then you can lecture me. And I think that's also fucking annoying. This would have been the most triggering thing to me ever. I would have had been screaming at my partner. So at work, Lynette is creeping on Stu, who was also a scene stealer this episode. I got to give a shout out to Stu. He made me laugh so hard. And she's like, what are you up to, Stu? And he's like, just updating my blog. And I'm like, what could this guy be blogging about ever? She has a favor to ask. He's stoked. She asks him to go kidnap her children. And he, his eyes are, like, popping out of his head.
Yeah, he's like, what the fuck is happening? It's
so funny. And so, well, at first he's like, you want to make him jealous? Like, she wants to sleep with him. But they do this whole operation where he rolls up to their house really slowly, and Lynette makes Tom watch this yet again. And he's like, for real? Like, you fucking did this? But she's like, just watch. And so at first, Stu is like, hey, kids. And they're like, we don't talk to strangers. Then he's like, I have candy. And they're like, huh, maybe. And then he's like, and we're going to go to the circus. And the kids, like, run and get in the back of his car.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was insane how easy
And Tom calls his son idiots.
I mean, they are.
It was such a crazy scene. It made me laugh so hard. It was very funny. All the acting was on point. But as soon as the kids get in the car, we see Mrs. McCluskey is outside the passenger window. And she's like, hey, you. And she tasers the fuck out of Stu. And it was the best thing to happen. It was the best thing to watch. So
yeah,
that's Lynette's whole storyline. She wins yet again. I love her planning. I love her operations.
Yeah, I like what she makes Tom look kind of stupid. I don't know why. Like, it just makes me laugh.
Well, Tom was kind of a dick to her the whole episode. He was like, you don't have to lecture me. I'm fine. And then, like, he's not. So, yeah, that's Lynette for you. Love a Lynette Tom. They're going strong.
Yeah, they are. They are. Of course. They always are. Classic.
Yeah. Someone else who's not going strong, though, is Bree.
Yes. So last but not least, we got Bree Vandekamp. So basically, Bree's story kind of starts with her reading her newspaper, cutting coupons. She doesn't seem like the kind of that would cut coupons, but whatever.
I forgot about cutting coupons. Also, a timestamp of the era.
Yeah. So as she's doing this, she notices there's a marriage announcement for her and George. Naturally, this pisses her the fuck off. Yeah. Like, rule number one, don't just post an announcement, like, without talking to the other person. Like, it was so weird.
That seems to be George's MO. Like, I feel like if he had been having more conversations with Bree, he could have kept this going longer. But I feel like he just did a lot of impulsive things and very, like, possessive things.
It's like if he thinks if she could just, no, he thinks that if he could just, like, marry her as fast as possible, she'll, like, have, like, whiplash and let it happen. I don't know. It's so bizarre. But Bree, like, gets pissed and goes to his work, and she's, like, telling him that she's unhappy with it, and Georgia notices that she's not wearing her engagement ring. So he, like, gets kind of upset and tells her to put it on, and Bree's like, yeah, Bree's like, fuck no, saying, and she's like, I'm not comfortable wearing it right now, like, I don't want to, and George, like, puts it on her finger, and it was, like, kind of, like, a metaphor almost for rape, I felt like, the way that he...
Oh, that's, like, smart.
Like, in a way, I guess, I don't know,
I mean, maybe it was not dramatic. Okay to, like, any of the ways that he's acting in this episode. Just, like the excuses.
It's, like, the pressure.
Well, yeah, because he makes an excuse about the wedding announcement. He's like, oh, that, like, I meant to, we had just had our talk. I couldn't, like, pull it from the paper. Mm-hmm. Very excuse-ish, like, the excuses that he did. And then, yeah, he forces her to wear the ring in a way that is, like, not chill.
Mm-mm.
It's just all, like, you don't, like, it's bad behavior, we should say. Bad behavior.
Yeah, it's weird. So, like, the biggest red flag of all time happens next. Bree gets a visit from this girl named Layla, or Leela, I don't know, Layla. And she starts popping off to Bree about George being crazy. She's like, he's super jealous, he's super dangerous. And she's like, George slapped me one time after seeing me, like, talk to a guy. Did he light her car on fire?
He lit her ex-boyfriend's car on fire when he found out that he lived down the street.
Yeah, and then he was, like, stalking her. So Bree is, like, super offended by this, which I'm like, okay, you're already getting a weird feeling from him, and he has acted very possessive of you. Like, I get that this is extreme, but I almost would be, like, maybe not so dismissive of this woman, because Bree's just like, get the fuck out, like, I don't believe you.
Yeah, Bree gets pissed off. She's like, the audacity of you to come into my house, a stranger, to come in here. And I'm like, you can fucking chill, like, you invited her in and she told you what she had to say.
It was just weird. And like, Bree basically, like, realizes though that she, like, can't explain why Layla would do this, like why she would make this stuff up. So she asked George about it, and he obviously lies. And he's like, Layla's obsessed with me. She's a troubled person. And he, like, shows her, like, pharmacy records that show that she was, like, on a bunch of antidepressants and antipsychotics.
I know. I said HIPAA violation right here.
Yeah. and like, Bree is like, well, why the fuck did you date her in the first place? And George is like, well, in the beginning, like, you're blinded to flaws. And... like, he doesn't even realize that he's, like, convincing her out of liking him by saying that. So she, like, as she leaves, she, like, takes off her ring. And then we see that George, like, had changed the name on a patient's file.
Yeah, Ethel Hollings or something like that.
Yeah. So later, she and George are having dinner, and they run into Ty Grant, who, as we remember, Ty Grant was apparently the man she was engaged to that she left for Rex.
Yeah.
And she tells him that they used to date, but she tells Ty that George is just a good friend, which obviously was kind of
okay. That's concerning. She says it right in front of his motherfucking face too. She's like, he's a good friend, and it's like, he asked you to get engaged.
Yeah, and then George is like, actually, we're engaged, and like, Bree gets pissed, so she asks Ty to dance, and George, like, freaks the fuck out and demands that she puts her ring on, like a crazy person. And he starts to get, like, kind of physical with her. And Bree's like, fuck no, this, like, we're not getting married. I'm not doing this. She tells him he needs to leave.
Well, because, like, Ty Grant punches him, I think, in the face.
Well, like, yeah. So when he's getting forceful, Bree's, like, telling him it's off. That's when Ty Grant, like, gets involved. Yeah. And George, like, finally leaves, but he takes his card, like, Ty's valet card, and then, like, steals his car and burns it. He's got a thing for torching vehicles.
I know. I'm like, is this a pattern?
Yeah, but so this shit's insane. Like, we see George truly fly off the handle here. Like, we haven't really seen him get, like, that crazy. Like, we've seen him do crazy things, but not act so
He's escalating. Manic. Yeah, he's getting really manic and, like, really possessive. Like I was saying, if he had been a chill sociopath, like, he could have gotten away with this for way longer.
Yeah.
But he made a lot of wrong moves by forcing the marriage announcement, forcing her to wear her ring all the time. Mm-hmm. And Bree will not have that. She could have Ty Grant. And I have to note, Ty was pretty hot.
He was a handsome guy.
Ty was handsome, like over Rex for sure.
Yeah, so, that's the craziest part.
Over Rex, like I can't believe she left this dude. So yeah, George scares the shit out of me. I feel bad for Layla Mitzman, who is the girlfriend that came over to Bree's house. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I do know girls who have said like, oh, so my boyfriend's ex like hit me up and like said all this stuff. Like I've never had that happen to me personally. I don't know what that feels like or how people, if you take it with a grain of salt or I don't know if you have info on that. I'm interested. Like
I don't, sadly. I wish I did.
It's never happened to me. And I don't think I've delved too deep into the type of personality that takes it upon themselves to reach out to the new girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or maybe I just haven't had that traumatic of an experience.
I haven't really delved into that pool. So I don't know, but I am assuming it would be a very strange experience.
I don't know. I feel like I would not have been like, leave my house immediately. How could you say that about the sweetest guy ever? Because that's what Bree fucking said. And I'm like, you're not even going to be like, wait, for real?
I guess I would have asked her like, hey, you know, what's the context? Like, I would have asked for more context. I would have been like, what's going on? Like, I would have humored her, I guess, enough. But yeah, no.
Yeah. Well, another hot guy that I feel confident is over the age of 18, so I can say that, is Matt. Mm-hmm. And Matt is going out to leave the house. And Betty's like, where do you think you're going? And he says, going to look for Caleb. And she's like, at night. And he's like, he doesn't really show his face in the day, if you haven't noticed. And he's like, would you rather we just like let him be on the loose? He could be in trouble or hurting another girl. And I think Matt says he didn't hurt her. He was just hungry. And then Mrs. Applewhite is like, I wasn't talking about Gabby, but you know that. And Matt is just looking frustrated and like, And then we see him at the park, and I have to say his fit is really fresh. They gave him something other than a wife beater. So super happy about that. And we all know he's meeting Danielle, who is not looking as hot. And that's all that happens. They like meet on a park bench. So I guess our imaginations can fill in the rest.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah. So boring. And we never close the loop on like Betty ever. Like it was a weird cold open.
Yeah.
So all the way from Betty, now we're here at the end. And in a world of darkness, we all need some kind of light, is what Mary Alice says. And I feel like we've heard that line before. But whether it's a great flame to show us how to win back what we've lost. And we see George sitting in front of that car fire looking powerful.
Yeah.
And she says, or a powerful beacon intended to scare away potential monsters. And we see those lights on Mrs. McCluskey's like house. And then Mary Alice says, or a few glowing bulbs that reveal to us the truth of our past. And we see Susan spying on her dad, I guess, who did not look that great. And she says, we all need something to help us get through the night, even if it's the tiniest glimmer of hope. And that's where I noted, because we see Caleb being arrested as that line drops. And I'm like, new actor? Okay.
Yeah.
So there we are. And it was quite a whirlwind. I think we made a lot of progress.
Yeah, a lot happened. It was kind of like a dark episode in ways. Like it covered a lot of crazy stuff. But I guess we'll get to that when we rate it. But do you want to dive into our fuck, marry, kill?
Yeah. Do you have your picks ready or?
Yeah, I guess I could go first. My fuck would be Ty Grant.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Just because like he was handsome, but just because he like the way he stood up for Bree and like was, I don't know. I liked the way he handled all that.
You were not as excited about him as I was, I thought, when I said he was kind of hot. And you were like, I guess. And
I was like, he's handsome. He's good looking, but I liked his personality too. Mary, I'd probably marry Lynette because I love the way she parented in this. That was amazing. Okay. And I appreciate it. And then kill, I mean, at this point, it's like George every episode. I don't even know.
George every episode.
I mean, this was pretty brutal. Like, him getting, like, so aggressive. I was like, Yeah, no. Bye. Oh, you're not fun, he's crazy.
So scary.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So. The actor has like crazy eyes, so.
I know he does. You told me he played the voice of Hercules, though.
He's a singing voice of Hercules. Oh,
the singing voice of Hercules.
Yeah. So his name, oh, fuck. I'll
he
think of it.
He was in something else I saw recently. I forget what show. But yeah. My yeah. Fuck, Marry, Kill follows similar lines. I will mm-hmm. also fuck Ty Grant because mm-hmm. I never knew that he was going to be way hotter than Rex. And he looks like a grown-up frat boy, and I love it. So, and he defended Bree's honor, and he mm-hmm. didn't judge her, even though she had a really weird opening line for what George was to her. Like, if some dude was hitting on me, and I was like, this is my really good friend, and he's like, we're engaged, it would be so awkward. So, good on Ty Grant, would fuck you. I would marry Morty, who was quite the scene stealer. I had to give it to Morty. He was such a... He's still standing by Sophie, even though he knows she's a nutball. And he knew about Susan's dad. And he knew that Sophie was lying to her about it. And he still was marrying this bitch.
Yeah.
So Morty's a loyal motherfucker.
He was my second pick. So I feel you on that.
Okay. And then I am going to have to kill George as well. Just because, like, there's nobody else as horrible. Nobody's committing as horrible of acts these days.
Yeah.
So, dang. I miss Andrew. I do have to note that. Spent a couple of too many episodes without him. Andrew, come back.
Yeah, I miss Andrew, too. I miss his attitude. But really quick side note, his name's Roger Bart, and he actually has won a Tony for playing Snoopy in... You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which is insane. That whole sentence was insane.
Like, what kind of performance could he have given in that role?
I don't fucking know. I don't know.
And also, who was seeing that play?
It's like a very famous play.
Is it?
Yeah, it's been revived a bunch of times. Yeah, that's what I think, too. It's weird, but I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, well, Roger Bart, love it.
Yeah, he's a great performance actor. Here. Yeah.
So I think we could choose a housewife of the week. I have two picks.
Okay.
It's tough because Lynette did some masterminding yet again with this plan to kidnap her own children.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty housewife of the week status activity. But I also want to give it to Gabby because I thought that she had a nice monologue, a heartfelt monologue of... like emotion that we haven't seen from her yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who it should go to out of those two, but those are the two that come to my head.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to go with, I don't know. Which one are you leaning more towards?
Gabby, only because we've given it to Lynette a lot.
Yeah, and I think Gabby had, like, a real emotional breakthrough. So let's give it to Gabby.
Let's give it to Gabby.
Okay.
Oh.
Proud of her.
And now that I'm looking back, I'm like, I wish I could have fuck, married, or killed Danny Trejo now. But it's okay. What's done is done.
Yeah.
Because now we've moved on to our Apple rating.
Mm-hmm. I think I have mine.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, 4.75. You gave it 4.
No, I don't know how this happened.
That was a big difference. I thought you were going to do 4.5. Why did you give it a 4?
Let me give it 4.25.
Why did you give it a 4? What the hell?
I don't know. I really liked a lot of this episode. I did. I thought Lynette's storyline was fun. I thought, one second. Okay, yeah. So I thought Lynette's storyline was really fun. I thought Gabby's was really touching. I liked Susan's, but it definitely feels like they don't know what to do with her character right now. So yeah. I was kind of like, that story was interesting, but also not, because she's never really ever talked about her dad or caring or any of that before.
Yeah, it seems really weird that now she's like, my dad.
Yeah. And then Bree's storyline was good. I did like Bree's a lot, but I just, like, they spent, I didn't like the opening being about Betty and then the episode not really being about Betty really at all.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't really care for the Applelight plot line in this episode. The Matthew Danielle storyline is also just like, they're not giving us anything from it. So it's like they're setting it up, but they're not. I don't know. I'm like we see them on the bench and then it goes away. So it's like, how are we supposed to care about what the fuck they're trying to do there? I don't know.
Good points.
So, like, I wouldn't call it, like, a top-tier episode, but it was, like, above average for sure because there were so many great storylines. But it just – there were a couple of things about it, I guess, that just threw me off. And I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it as much as, like, the last episode.
I guess I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Lynette and Tom's storyline even more than the last episode. Like, this had me laughing out loud. It had me almost tearing up because of Gabby's storyline.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind Susan. I didn't hate her as much as I could've. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Well, Susan's had episodes where there's been episodes where I've hated Susan more.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I didn't hate her as much. So I gave it like a high marks for that reason. And then Bree and George, I like that we came to kind of a breaking point. Like, obviously he's doing insane behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So like something has to come to a head now. So that's what I liked about Bree is I'm like, something's going to have to happen. So it like felt like there was a lot of movement, not necessarily on the Applewhite storyline or Paul and Zach, which normally I would dock more points for, but I didn't mind because I was so interested in the ladies this week that it didn't bug me.
Yeah.
So that's why I gave it such high marks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think all of yours are valid points too. It's like I simultaneously stand by my number and agree with yours.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking for another. There has to be, and I want it, and I don't want to choose one out of desperation. I don't want to give something the whole five stars, the five apples, but I want there to be another five apple episode this season.
I think we'll get there. There's some crazy shit coming down
the road.
I think
in season three, there will be, because you seem to have high reviews of season three. So there has to be some five apples. I want more five apples. I want there to be killer episodes.
You'll get some this season, because like this, I know what happens this season. I just don't remember when. But there's like so much shit to still go down. I'm like, I can't believe we're already eight episodes in and haven't even started some of those plot lines.
I know. I'm like, there's 24 episodes. I feel like so much has happened this season already. So, well, thanks for joining us, everybody.
Yeah, thank
you. We are eight episodes in now. We're making some headway. We're digging our heels in deep.
We're getting there.
But next week, we are doing season two, episode 9. You can watch any of these episodes on Hulu or Amazon Prime. Hopefully, they don't change that anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's the holidays and the New Year's, so we hope everybody's safe, but you have lots of time to watch Desperate Housewives. You have lots of time to catch up, just get up to speed with where we're at. And we are open to any feedback, like, share, review, do all the things. And we're on Twitter, Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
So... yeah, we usually like to leave you with the words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.